Blog Talk Radio.
By a group on All Poetry called Late Night Poets. And we also have anthologies available on Amazon.com under the same moniker. So feel free to check those out and help support these shows. All right. That said, tonight's show is about... we're finishing Osho quote in open poetry. A certain darkness is needed to see the stars, is the quote by Osho. So thank you for that, everybody. All right, going to the studio here. And we have Miss Pam Ray. Hello, Pam.
I am doing great. Looking forward to hanging out with you, other cool poets, and delving into some poetry. And how are you doing?
I'm good. Good, thank you. It's a hot summer day here, so it's a beautiful thing.
Yeah, we've been having a lot of rain, so the weather hasn't been particularly hot, but I also really haven't been outside today because we've had quite a bit of downpours, which is fine because, you know, the ground needs it, you know, so it's all good.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we've had a fairly wet year this year, too. But that'll keep the forest fires down, so there's
exactly.
the bonus in that.
Exactly, that's another good point. Yes, absolutely.
Awesome. Okay, I'm going to post the first link here. And if you wouldn't mind, please, when you see it.
I'd be happy to. All right. This is The Flower That Knights Made by Grewright 76, and it goes like this. Flower of life bloomed with rosy yawns and smiles. It arrived on dark skies as clouds loomed in devil's clout, manacles and tentacles and fierce grip, as the angel smiled through the black rain. Saviors descended to call the stifling chains, a lease of life from the gods ordained. Her smiles and sighs that call forth to embrace became the reason to permit them life, a drug in excess. Then the knights led their empty vessels and treasures filled. Black clay, glad to find creator's hands, went into wild storms like starving beasts, to testing battles with will and love armed. Hope that draws you like the golden swan behind the piper went with armors clad. A very soft pericarp of self-love alone clung on perspiring toughest skins just so that the night smiled at every wee dawn shine. Didn't forget to take the orange scent of the arbors and force of enchanted life. When hope drowns in tender death, only to rouse the dead with her soft touch to taste that drink of smallest victories that bloom and fade like the teething dandelion. Yet life beckons with more green, slow crusades that decades become, not those wars that in smoke find doom, where knights lay red in riverbeds, but those destined to rise at every turn, born forever again, and be the knight of she who drugs you with her innocent love. End poem.
Beautiful read, Pam. And, you know, Blu-ray 76 is East Indian, I believe. So this is not his first language, which is just astonishing in this poetry. I mean, you know, you'd never know that this is his second language. I mean, you know, he has such attention to detail and such a gripping storyline throughout the poem, just with fascinating imagery as well. You know, and all this is about just being enraptured by a drug that an innocent love can bring. And so this is a fascinating poem. What was your take on it, Pam?
Yeah, I absolutely have to read it. It is fascinating. You know, I'd say Blu-ray 76 is definitely becoming one of my favorites as far as uses of imagery and metaphors, especially in telling a story. I really felt there was this whole idea on the creation of the kind of love that becomes addictive. And I like how it's told in a mythological type way, almost as if she was created. It's almost the whole idea of woman, of love being created as a reward for men. And then becomes more than a reward. It becomes an addiction. And I really like this all the way through, but especially the second and fourth stanzas particularly spoke to me. So wonderful write and very well done. And I do apologize to the dog. If I could, I'd get them to shut up, but if chances are I just go out there, tell them to be quiet, and they just be like, we don't know what that means.
Yeah. No, I got you. That's okay. But thank you for that read, Pam, and the comment. It was great. Okay, so we have a caller. I'm going to bring them on. Hello, area code 919. Who's calling, please?
Hi, this is Jack Tomkovic calling from Chapel Hill, North Carolina. Hello, all.
Hi, Jack. Nice to hear your voice.
Thank
you. It's been a long time.
It's been way long. You know, stuff happens.
Yeah, life happens for sure. But I'm glad you called in. Did you get a chance to hear Pam read that poem?
I did. In fact, I had liked it and commented on it, I think, a couple of days ago. I had written,
okay.
Yet life beckons with more green midst slowed crusades that decades become. Good line. So I like the juxtaposition of nights fighting versus nature blooming and inviting. Bravo, creative and fresh. And the idea that it's in a second language just blows me away.
Absolutely. I appreciate that. Thank you, Kat.
Yeah.
Okay, so I'm going to post the next poem. If you wouldn't mind reading that, Jack, that would be great.
Okay, hold on here. Let me see what you got. This is going to be The Intoxicated. Okay. Oh, good. It's fairly short. All right. Intoxicated. Heady, intoxicated, you fill me like a drug. I crave for more. I am addicted to your lips. You thrill me to the core. I just want to overdose on you, but I know that it will be so sad. Please don't look at me and think I'm just a stepping stone, a fad. I need to understand how deep that our love blossoms and is real, because I'm head over heels in love. So please tell me how you feel. End poem.
Great read, Jack. And I liked it. I mean, you know, it was innocent, forthright, just a lovely expression of having feelings for somebody and being curious how they feel for you. And I thought it was an excellent write on understanding love. So excellent job, Evan. And Pam Ray, what did you think of the poem?
I have to agree. You know, it's all about, it's a wonderful, straightforward expression of telling somebody how you feel about them and wanting to know how they feel. You know, I like this all the way through, but especially that second stanza that says, please don't look at me and think I'm just a stepping stone, a fad. Like, it's that idea of feeling a deep love and wanting it returned but not being sure. So excellent,
yeah.
Write and very well done.
Great comment, Pam. Thank you. And Jack, what did you think?
I like the whole addicted to love thing, going back to the song, because love can be an addiction, and people can want and need each other like an addict's fix. At least that's how I see it. So it's very powerful and very moving.
Well said. Thank you, Jack. Okay, I'm going to post the next poem here. And this is by Jesna Sejan. Youthfulness of the mind into my ocean, drown into my seas unseen, caress upon the broken boulders of my mane, rest on my shoulders. Let's gallop together, ride on brown beauty, forget all trials and temptations, cares of duty. Leave all people we love, care and know, climb the clouds of fluffy dreams, arrow and bow. Come, let us sway into the glitzy, glittery breeze, climb the cold mountain, revolve, ready to freeze. Dive deep down, holding our hands, gripped in pace, carried by our parachutes, dangling in space. Come, arouse my senses, teach me to fly. Our young, youthful yonder will soar our dreams high. End poem. I liked it. It had a vive de jour, you know, a love of the day and living for the day. And I thought it was just an excellent expression of innocence and sheep-speaking dreams and holding hands, gripping in pace, carried by your parachute, dangling in space. That was a great line as well.
Yeah.
What did you think, Pam?
Yeah, I really think with this particular one, the title speaks volumes, youthfulness of the mind. So it's not just it's not about usefulness of the body, but rather of the mind, of the spirit. And I like the imagery in this and the alliteration. That third stanza with "Come, let us sway into the glitzy, glittering breeze, climb the cold mountain, revolve, ready to freeze, dive deep down." You know, that whole stanza there is particularly appealing in the idea of living life to the fullest. So just a wonderful write and very well done.
Great comment, Pam. Thank you. And Jack, what are your thoughts?
Well, at age 70, you know, so much of youthfulness is in the mind. I've been married to the same beautiful woman for 49 years, you know, and it's just like the second day after I walked her down the aisle. I mean, I'm not 70. I'm 70 in my body, I know that, but I'm not 70 in my mind. So I love this whole thing. And the parachutes, yeah, I like that one too.
Absolutely. Great comment, Jack. Thank you. Okay, we have another caller. This is Luke Jr. Hello, Luke.
Hello.
Hi, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you. It's good to be here.
Did you get a chance to hear the last poem that was read?
I heard like the last few lines.
Okay. Well, maybe we'll skip you on this comment.
Okay.
All right. So I'm going to grab the next poem here. And if you wouldn't mind, please reading this, Luke.
Okay.
Okay, I'm posting it now.
The One That Paints You Bright by Tekunda P. Musing Weenie, and I apologize if I said that wrong. Art is beautiful, but ain't deceitful. The heart feels dreadful. You can call me a fool, but girl, I miss you. I am breaking my rules. I'm starting to lose my cool. The feeling is eating my soul. But there is nothing light can do. Regrets are making me cold. I should have kept on knocking the door rather than keep letting my emotions flow. Girl, you are art. I'd hate to paint you blue. After we meet again, I want to be the one who paints you bright. You will always be missed. Always.
Great read, Luke. And, you know, this had a great rhythm and flow to it, but you know, it speaks to losing somebody and hoping for them to come back and take you back, and painting things a brighter color in this turn, which is fantastic. I mean, you know, I think we've all been there at some point. I should have kept knocking the door rather than letting my emotions flow. Girl, you are art. I'd hate to paint you blue. After we meet again, I want to be the one who paints you bright. You will always be missed, always. Yeah, so definitely a bit of a haunting poem. What did you think, Pam?
I have to agree. There is something dark and haunting about this. You know, I feel like that the first two lines, art is beautiful but ain't deceitful, could really bring up some discussion on the philosophy of art, because, you know, art can be deceitful in a way, but it isn't deceitful unless the artist themselves paints it as deceitful. So those first two lines I find extremely thought-provoking. I thought this had really wonderful rhyme and flow. And I thought, you know, the first time I read it through 13 days ago, I thought it was a wonderful write on seeing the bright side of somebody who didn't see the bright side in themselves. But as it was being read by Luke, in which you did a wonderful job of that, and you commented on it, Grace, I couldn't help but notice the lines, "I should have kept on knocking the door," and then the end, "You will be missed always." And it almost feels like the whole idea of somebody writing a poem to a friend who had committed suicide. I could be wrong on that, but that's kind of the thought I get from it. But a beautiful write and very well done.
Great comment, Pam, very astute. And Jack, what are your thoughts?
Well, I think you could write a master's thesis on those first two lines. Is art, you know, deceitful? Well, it can be. Look at Escher with his prints there, you know, or the staircases that lead to nowhere. And there's actually a term, trump the wheel, literally to fool the eye in art. So that's a whole another discussion, but this is just a nice, peaceful, gentle poem that has a little darker side that I don't think you see the first time until you maybe read it a second or third time. A little bit of haunting in there, a little bit of the girl who got away or the guy who got away.
Absolutely. Great comment, Jack. Thank you. And Luke, what did you think?
I agree with everything that's been said. I will say that the feelings that I got from this was that there is there's this kind of repetition of like wanting to knock the door. So, you know, it's like the regret is there. Like I should have kept on knocking the door rather than letting my emotions flow. And just comparing one to art, you know, it's beautiful. But then also the color blue usually matched with sadness. I just think that's, you know, a really well-written poem.
Great comment. Thank you, Luke. Okay, Pam, I've got the next write up, if you wouldn't mind, please.
Okay, well, before you read, I wanted to let you know that I went ahead and brought Bobby on.
Oh, hey, Bobby.
Hi, Bobby.
Hey, Bobby.
Hey, Captain.
Hey. Glad
to be here. Welcome to the show.
Yes,
did you get a chance to hear that last poem?
I did. That was a very powerful piece. Very melancholy. I really like the insight that everyone's had to it. Pam saying something about perhaps this is about a suicide. Or one of the other commenters about the great love who is lost, got away. It does have a very a somber tone to it, like it's someone almost giving themselves recriminations for not doing enough. And but it's a sad, but it's beautiful.
Absolutely. Great comment. Thank you, Bobby. Okay, Pam, whenever you're ready, please.
All right. Unrecovered. By Versus Goliath. Do you know the difference between a user and an absolute addict? It's all in the dosage, not being able to cope without it. There were evenings I could fool myself saying my cravings were fully shelved, sat before pictures of the past, watching smiles, probably our last, high-ended, unpoetic crassness, like balloons popped in lower intestines. Heroin never found, lying on the ground, sulfa king crowned, emotion rot drowned, this throne dusty as the metal tarnishes, tisk tisk task, the strung out maid should have finished at one point, she's yet been banished. Those faraway lands chosen look like a puzzle piece settling in, more fertile than kingdoms frozen, whose main export itchy nettles. Scratch the nerve endings, please, one last time, fill veins with peace. That slithering finger gliding up arm, hair on neck raising like pleasant alarms, sweet nothings sing the distance from harm, careful flex of feather touch, royalty disarmed. No weapon slice as deep as betrayal, flesh loses motivation to continue. Messages mute as vacuum ensues. Scream into the nothing for something never returning. But first hike to mountaintop, initial moments, breath stopped. So sweaty, thought we'd need a mop. The appreciation of every salty drop. Gone to the wind like ashes scattered. Left to wonder how much it all mattered. End poem.
Well, beautiful read, Pam. And, I mean, that's a hard-hitting poem about being addicted to something and having to fight the loss of that addiction and, you know, wondering whether it all matters, you know, in the end. You're left wondering. I thought it was just a fantastic poem on the subject of being unrecovered. beautiful title as well. And Jack, what did you think?
Well, some things you never get over, you know, and the one line that I'm looking at here is no weapons slice as deep as betrayal. And that love that isn't returned, or that addiction that you thought was going to take you to that special place takes you nowhere. You know, that's, again, that's some powerful stuff there. Every salty drop gone to the wind like ashes scattered, you know, how much did it matter? We may never know. Again, this is haunting. This is almost a little scary. I think we've all been to places where we wish we had not gone.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree. Thank you, Jack. And Luke, what did you think?
I am drawn to the same line. No weapon slices deep as betrayal. And my thoughts are, you know, anything can be used as a weapon. But the thought that something like a weapon that is everywhere and anywhere, you know, can't cause damage anywhere near the level of pain from betrayal was something that I really liked in this poem. I'd say that it is hauntingly, beautifully written, great flow, and an incredible description full of metaphors about addiction.
Absolutely. There's wonderful comment. Thank you, Luke.
Thank you.
And Bobby, what did you think?
With the gentleman, that particular line is very powerful. This is such a layered piece. You can talk about substance addiction, or you can talk about obsessing over a person. For all the energy that you devote to a relationship, to have it either unrequited or betrayed, the hollowness that is left behind. You know, they say some things you never get over, or perhaps some things you're not meant to get over. And this talks about that.
Right, absolutely. Good comment. Thank you, Bobby. Very insightful. And Pam, what did you think?
Yeah, I thought this had a powerful imagery and metaphors all the way through, and it was definitely a strong, dark write on addiction, and I like how Bobby points out that it can be different kinds of addiction. I'm particularly drawn to hives ended with unpoetic crassness, like balloons popped in lower intestine, reminding us of how far an addict is willing to go to support their, their habit. And I like that it opens up with that question, do you know the difference between a user and an absolute addict? And the answer is all in the dosage, not being able to cope without it. It's almost like as if in the beginning of the poem, the person is trying to convince themselves that they're not an addict. Exactly. And I also like the lines of split and fingers gliding up arms, hair on neck rising like pleasant alarms. You really get the feeling of somebody, you know, shooting heroin up within a lot of these lines. So beautifully written and very well done.
Wonderful comment, Pam. Okay, Bobby, I have the next write-up, if you wouldn't mind reading, please.
Not at all. Probably have took myself off of mute. Okay, we have. Oh, Sweet Addiction by J.A. Hartley. Okay. Come on. It's what you do to me inside that hurts. Out here I can escape you, but inside you're my God, rousing me incessantly, waking me with your call to prayer, to pilgrimage. I am your disciple. A saint for you, the world divine. I need only you to live. No food, no water, no air. These images of you in my mind, like wands, spells, are heaven. Your body is scripture, hidden meanings, depths, awe. I need only touch the cover to feel the message in my soul. More powerful than I am, you bring me to my knees, client, ready to worship. I surrender. you are a drug which will destroy me, but I always want more. I need more. And I will sell myself and all I have to burn my lips on you again. For your high, I will rot in hell, betray everyone, even die myself. For death would be a break from the constant fight. I love you, but I curse the first sight of your eyes. And gone.
Wow. You know, if you're so overtaken by somebody that, you know, you can't breathe. I mean, that you live on air and no water, no food, no air. You know, that's just a powerful thing right there. And I really liked it. You know, it was imaginative, creative, and well-penned.
Yeah.
What did you think?
It was just, yeah, absolutely beautiful. It's a stunning sensual rite. But in the idea of a love-hate relationship, the idea that emotionally, that, you know, you can't stand the person. There's always that conflict. But physically, there's an attraction. I really like how she brought the idea of some, you know, forms of worship in here, like where it says, client, ready to worship, I surrender. You are a drug which will destroy me. But I always want more. I need more. And I will sell myself and all I have to burn my lips on you again. I like how it just takes on that idea of completely surrendering oneself. So beautifully written and very well done.
Great comment, Pam. Thank you. And Jack, what are your thoughts?
Your body is scripture. That's pretty well done. Wish I'd written that. This thing where I need you, I want you, I have to have you, but I curse the first sight of your eyes. That's powerful stuff. This would have won an award if this had been, you know, my contest.
Right. Absolutely.
Good stuff.
Thanks, Jack.
Yeah.
And Luke, what did you think?
Oh, yeah, this was an extremely powerful write. I would actually say that the two lines that got me was, it's what you do to me inside that hurts. Out here, I can escape you, but inside, you're my God, rousing me. And, you know, with this being said, I would say, you know, thinking of how true damage can be inflicted on the inside and also the outside, which I think, you know, can connect quite well to mental health. I'd say that it's true that physical damage can cause a lot of pain and agony and leave scars. But mental damage can also leave scars that never heal. And, you know, it's a frightening thought. And my heart goes out to all those who have and who still are suffering from any kind of mental abuse. It's, you know, a very powerful rite that captures addiction perfectly. It shares a form of acceptance. I'd say that this is someone that's accepted that this is all there is to their life. And they're also self-aware in this following line. You are a drug that will destroy me, but I always want more. And they know that it's going to end badly, but they love that sweet addiction that this other person gives to them.
That's a good Absolutely. Great comment, Luke. And Bobby, what did you think?
This is a stunning contrast to the one we just read. This also speaks of addiction. Very clearly, addiction or obsession to a person. If you think about it, you can just as easily apply substance abuse. It's what you do to me inside that hurts. I'm your disciple, world divine. I need only you to live. No food, no water, no air. That's addiction, without a doubt. And everything pales by comparison to this one focal point, this one obsession. And here is a person clearly addicted to someone else. They've made this person the nucleus of their universe. And I have to wonder, with situations like this, how much of this is self-inflicted. It's torment, regardless of whether it's self-inflicted or abused by someone else. It's still torment, and it's just this is such a powerful piece that you can feel the anguish of this person, the yearning the desperate need to feel, to be with this person or to have this obsession.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you, Bobby. Okay, Jack, I've got your poem up if you wouldn't mind reading that, please.
Oh, joy. Yeah, let me pop to mine. I was just I was kind of wrapped up in that. Yeah, mine's a little different. The Carpenter's Kid. Neo-surrealistic realism. Can a poet on the planet deconstruct that gibberish? Life plus 33 years, said the Jewish guy from Nazareth. Carpenter's Kid. Darned if he ever built a solid table without a shim. Cabinet he made fell off the hook and broke my wife's mama's pottery, just saying. Don't hang wallpaper in a house he crafted. Cried for 3 days, but planted roses for the scent. Still write poems, not clear how rocky the road or how steep the climb. Ideas are comets slicing across the sky. All we can do is grab a few as they go by. End poem.
Great read, but I was just laughing at your author's notes there. It says, neo-surrealistic realism in the college poetry class. Should have quit right there. Right.
It's a true story, yeah.
Yeah. No, I like it. I mean, it obviously inspired something in you to remember that quote and share it with the world. But, you know, I mean, your poem is it's inviting and it's engaging. It really carries the reader through in a fascinating flow and rhythm. I mean, you know, you're not rhyming throughout this, but it has a flow and feel as though it is a rhyming poem, which is not easy to do. So skilled write, Jack. Excellent read.
Thank you. You got my drift right on the buddy, right on the button.
Thank you. And Pam, what did you think?
Yeah, well, first of all, it's great, Jack, to have you call in and read your poem. Good to hear from you. I did enjoy the humor in this one, you know, especially that beginning and then the built a solid table without a shim, cabinet he made fell off the hook and broke my wife's pottery, just saying, you know. And to me, this is so filled with great humor. But, you know, it also makes a message to me, a serious message, and the idea that we all have our gifts that we've been given, that we've been blessed with. And we shouldn't judge somebody because they can't build a cabinet because maybe there's something else they're meant to do. I just really enjoyed
this one. Save the world. Thank you.
Yeah, exactly.
Again, you got it.
Something like
that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
can I just mention my sister Julie, who's a playwright, wrote a play called Jesus the Teenage Years, and it's a heck of a play. If you ever find a chance to see it, yeah, Jesus the Teenage Years. And so the line was that Jesus was just a bad carpenter, and he literally couldn't, you know, build anything. And his sister Lilith was actually the skilled craftsman in the family by Joe's first marriage.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Well, that's great. Thank you for sharing that, Tom. I mean, Jack. And
thank you.
Luke, what did you think?
I would definitely say that I'd say that it's a powerful question that may have many answers depending on who you ask. You know, is it indeed gibberish, or is it something that we could find the answer to by searching deeper? I believe that we all have hidden talents of our own, and I believe that you learn by doing.
Amen.
And, you know, to kind of go further than that, to me, I don't know if I got this wrong, but I sense that the person like made a mistake but still found a way to find something beautiful within the days of crying.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Great comment. Thank you. And Bobby, what are your thoughts?
I like the levity in it. It has a beautiful cadence to it. Very smooth. It's a very pleasant read. I like the subtle philosophy to it too. And I think Pam struck on the heart of it when she said it suggests that not everyone is going to be gifted in what they think they're supposed to be gifted at, but what they have to do is find what their gift is and play to it. And
bingo.
I think great observation. And but I really, as far as a read, I really enjoy this because I like the fact that the poem, even though it has a sort of spiritual foundation, it doesn't take itself too seriously.
Yeah, you can't beat people over the head with the religion. It doesn't work.
No, exactly.
And but you should.
I've got your poem up, Luke, if you wouldn't mind, please.
Oh, yes, absolutely. Astrolegasta Acatalepsy by Luke J.R. The Midnight Man traveled and conquered their acrophobia for several nights, moonlit candles gathered around the starry night. A traveler from many moons ago, shallow and hollow with craters. For several burning lights, sunlit candles never to see morning lights. Hours became months, and handles became rusted from the candled brothers. The midnight woman saw burnt-out stars unlit. These were her caraders. Through the shadows, thieves would climb through the bone marrows, cast it upon the stage of two brothers, on by two abbreviated lovers. Darkness consumes the world they lived in. Our world is their world. Inside a cradle surrounded by candles lived. Shadows grew closer as the two brothers were standing near a mother's light. Not their own mother. It's the woman that followed the midnight man. The midnight man traveled through the unfortunate stars of many. For several nights, moonlit candles starved of the many lights ahead. A traveler from many moons ago, shallow and hollow, outside your window. Simply impossible, thought to be possible by the moonlit bone marrows. Months became years, and handlers became skeletal remains inside a frozen heart. The midnight woman saw the curves, edges, dimensions, and faces of plenty. Casted upon the starving moon, the craters became eyes, watchers. Watchers followed the visions of the midnight man. Darkness was needed, starved by the dozen. Just like one final whistle, brothers became stubborn, and the midnight woman became the midnight man.
Mm. Wow. That was imaginative and creative. I mean, had a great flow to the story, and, you know, it was really visceral and vivid imagery as well. I really liked it. You know, a traveler from many moons ago, shallow and hollow, outside your window, simply impossible. Thought to be possible by the moonlit bone marrows. Months became years. Handlers became skeletal remains inside a frozen heart. The midnight woman saw the curves, edges, dimensions, faces of plenty. I mean, just epic throughout this, right? Beautiful job, Luke. And what did you think?
I thought that was, first of all, a wonderful read. You know, I have to be honest, every time I read one of Luke's poems, I think to myself how much I'd like to be a fly on the wall of his mind when he's writing. And
yeah,
just get an idea of that writing process that's going on. I really like how this has a mythological feel to it to me. And it's got just a brilliant imagery and metaphors, and the general idea that I get from it is the idea of conquering fears to find the light, and the light being, you know, like knowledge or, you know, a spiritual light or, you know, something other than just a physical light. But whatever it is, the light in your life that is needed. I especially like the mention of through the shadows, thieves would climb through the bone marrows, cast upon the stage of two brothers fought on by two abbreviated lovers. Darkness consumed the wood world they lived in. Our world is their world. And it's, I like how he says their world is our world, or our world is their world. Like the whole idea of this isn't just happening to these two brothers. This is happening to everyone. So just a wonderful, thought-provoking write and very well done.
Thank you so much, Pam.
Great comment, Pam. Thank you. And Jack, what did you think?
Yeah, this will be one of my last comments here, but this is there's a lot in this poem. I like the time aspect about hours became months, months became years. You know, curves, edges, dimensions, faces of plenty. So there's a time aspect. There's the woman man. So the yin yang. I think you could teach a course on this poem. So again, I salute you, Luke. This is the kind of poem I wish I could write, but I don't.
Great comment. Thank you, Jack. And Bobby, what are your thoughts?
Well, first, I'd like to render a compliment that I've been saving for a long time. I've always enjoyed Luke's rhyming, or not his rhyming, his titling scheme, his device of using two words separated by a semicolon and both words starting. I love the style. It has such a singularity to it. That I could go through the whole list and just be content reading titles. It's fascinating. I find it a cerebral exercise because they're not simple words. And to shift my focus, your piece is very cerebral, very layered, very complex right here. There is there's the As Jack mentioned, there is the aspect of time and dimension and space. Our world is their world inside a cradle surrounded by candles lived. And basically. The midnight woman saw burned out stars, unlit, and these were her creators. I mean, so dark and so cosmic filaments in there that you've taken unlit stars and created a woman, and you've got to cast the stage upon two brothers. This is such a complex story. The fantasy in it is so elaborate and intricate that I swear if I weren't following you already, I would start following you again. Just the complexities, how you are able to plot this out, and I get the sense you are a very visual writer, that you see these things in your head before you put them down, and that makes a very elaborate, a very fascinating tapestry of words that you have here. So this is, and in the last line, the midnight woman became the midnight man. The transgendering in this, it just lends a subtlety to it that is very contemporary. I admire that last line. It just, the whole piece is one of those pieces that it's like cognac. It should not be gulped. It should be savored a little sip at a time and over a long period.
Fantastic comment, Bobby. And Luke, would you like to say anything about your poem?
Yeah, I will say that it is true that I do visualize these things. I actually spend a lot of time kind of putting myself in that exact location that I've kind of created, and I kind of like will look around and try and kind of structure something together. So absolutely. I would also say that all of your comments are, you know, pretty much hit the mark on it. So yeah, thank you very much.
Thank you, Luke.
Thank you for sharing.
Okay. You're welcome.
Guys, I'm going to have to head out, but I want to thank you all so much for letting me read my words and listen to yours. So y'all take care.
Great having you with us, Jack. Thank you.
All right. Good night and God bless.
You have a wonderful, night. Good night.
Thank you.
Okay, Bobby, I've got the next poem up if you wouldn't mind, please.
Hey, Jay? I want to let you know that I brought Lou on. So welcome, Lou.
Welcome to the show, to you,
Hi, everybody. Sorry I'm late. I was at a memorial.
Hi.
Hi. Hi, Luke. I didn't get to hear you read your poem so I could shed more tears. But I definitely will go read it. You know, I didn't get to hear you read it. What I like about this is your metaphors. I mean, I felt such a deep sadness and loneliness here, but also a searching for beauty, whatever goes in our life. It, like here it says, love living in your, Let me go back. It's just so visual that it just pulls you in, like right here. I could just see this deep black cavernous void. For several burning lights, sunlight candles never to see morning lights. Hours become months. Handles become rusted from the candle brothers. You know, the midnight woman shall burnt out stars until these were her creators. You know, the relationships that, you know, we build. To me, this is more than that. This goes a little bit deeper. This goes into past relationships and lives and times gone by. And I really wish I will have to go back and listen to my show so I can hear you read this. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Louise. Excellent comment. And Bobby, if you wouldn't mind reading for Vectus Man.
I'll do my best to channel Vectus Man, corrupting you. Nothing you could give me would ever make me feel inclined. Like a flash, I could bend you, turn you, and twist your mind. Don't think you can tease me, be anyone at all that's worthy. My loving would destroy you. I could use you like any floozy, taking away sweet innocence. You would crave for my touch, corrupting your mind, and so it's easy. It wouldn't take much. The thrill of my enslaving you, if you knew how good it feels. I'm thinking of you helpless, addicted to making sexual deals. You will do anything to please, experiment in a ruby red light, beg me to teach you more games, urge night after. Love living in your mind, desire, love longing to make it real. Nothing sacred to save you. I enjoy how helpless you'll feel. While wanting to play my fiddle, you won't find a new beginning. All you want is more corruption. You can't get enough of sinning. No one will try to save your soul. No cure for your corrupted mind. Don't think I'll be your savior. Your will has been assigned. End poem.
Beautiful read, Bobby. And, it's a fascinating poem on the subject of, having somebody under your control fully and wholly, that so that nobody can save them from wanting you. And, corrupting your mind and soul is easy. I wouldn't take much. The thrill of my enslaving you, if you knew how good it feels. And, the whole poem is just a powerful statement on the control that somebody has over another. So excellent job, Vectus. Pam, what did you think?
Yeah, I thought this was definitely a dark and powerful write. It reminded me of a couple comments that Bobby had made earlier, but in a different perspective. The idea of being addicted to either a person or, a drug. And this could almost be like the personification of a drug, or it could be an actual person talking. At first you think, the whole idea of, the dom sub type relationship, but then you realize that there's not that idea there, that this is truly all about someone that, if it is a person, has a very narcissistic personality that is all about, you know, wanting to hurt and belittle the person to the point where it actually comes across to me as making a statement on abuse, both physical and emotional. So just excellent write and very well done.
Great comment, Pam. Thank you. And Luke, what are your thoughts?
My thoughts are that on this line here, you will do anything to please experiment in a ruby red light. Beg me to teach more games. Urge to play night after night. Love living in your mind's desire. Love longing to make it real. Nothing sacred to save you. I enjoy how helpless you'll feel. And I really want to kind of address the ruby red light, as the red light is often used as a way to signify danger and warning. So when we think of red lights, we think of danger. And I think that's, you know, very beautifully demonstrated in this rite. I would also say that this part really stood out to me, as I do feel the sense of a warning that is within this poem, almost like a lesson to be learned. And there was darkness and the thought of addiction. Is there an escape? Well, I guess that depends on how far the person has fallen into this entangled web, and will they ever escape? Well, who knows?
Yeah, exactly. Thank you, Luke. And Bobby, what are your thoughts?
I agree with what Pam said. This is the obverse of the coin. We've heard from the addicted, and now we hear from the addiction. This is the personification of the element that will play, as I phrase it, mind fornication with you, and love every damn minute of it, because they're on top. Your weakness empowers them, and it says very clearly that the more dependent the partner becomes, the weaker the partner becomes, the stronger the addiction of the, and the more they like it. I don't think I'll be your savior. No one to try and save your soul. No cure for your corrupted mind. And this is the damning influence that has no reservations about taking the subject straight down the path to self-destruction and leading them by the hand in the process. This is a really powerful piece. I've never seen one approached from this point of view, and I think it's bloody brilliant.
Well said. Thank you, Bobby. And Lee, what are your thoughts?
I thought that Bobby did a fantastic reading, Vedic Sistis Man. He's one of my favorite poets. What I liked about this is how he twisted it. For me, there are those that they look for victims that they can possibly corrupt, or there are victims who want to be corrupted. And for me, I have a different take on the red light. The red light district is all those sexual places in Europe where you can go in and get any type of sexual satisfaction, whatever it is, visually or physically or both. And the thing with here is that he wants person to crave them, to beg them. It says nothing sacred, you know, everything, all your ambitions have been let down. And, you know, it says all you want is more corruption. You can't get enough of sinning. So some people do become deeply addicted.
Absolutely. Wonderful comment, Lou. Thank you. And would you mind reading the next one, please, Lou?
Okay. This poem is titled, You Are Heroin, by Mamiel. Your heroin powder in my nose, rubbed against my gums. Sweet ecstasy, in danger of overdose, wanting more of you, the taste of your mind. Reminds me of milkweed, like green beans with a hint of peaches. I am a monarch, living only for a fortnight. Be mine, be mine, be mine. My drug of choice, my only life source is you. End poem.
Beautiful read, Lee. And, you know, that's a fascinating poem on being, you know, so addicted to somebody that they become your only life source. And, you know, when you're that enraptured by somebody, that's a powerful thing. So just a wonderful poem on the subject of being addicted to somebody. And Pam, are you back? No. Luke, what did you think?
Well, I have a pretty short comment on this one. I'm going to say that it's a terrifying write that I think, once again, captures addiction very well. And I just kind of got this sense of like a blurred, thirsty vampire that just wants more.
Right. Absolutely. Thank you, Luke. And Bobby, what did you think?
Very powerful piece. Mamiel, I always like her writing. It's very succinct, very, very to the point. And even the opening just captures you. You are heroin, rub, powder in my nose, rubbed against my gums. Sweet ecstasy in danger of overdose, wanting more of you. I mean, she just captures it all. The taste of you, like green beans with a hint of peaches. I mean, just the visual imagery. And then the metaphor, I am a monarch. How ephemeral the lifespan, and living for only a fortnight, and in that fortnight, she wants to be consumed completely by this obsession, by this addiction. That very powerful stuff. Great piece.
Well said. Thank you, Bobby. And Liu, what did you think?
You know, what I was thinking, I'm going to take this in an opposite direction. You know, there's sometimes when you smell somebody and you taste them and you're attracted to them a lot, especially right here. This is the stanza that I like the most, the taste of your mind. Oh, my goodness, a mind is... You could lick somebody's mind, you know, just from the way they speak and their thoughts and their poetry. It's the stickiness, the things where you think about them all day. And, this, you know, milkweed is very, it's got needles on it and it, you know, it can hurt. And it also has this milk that comes out that's just so thick and sticky, like if it just stays you. And you know, and she says, sometimes if there's that saying, if I have to die tonight, I would like to have you as the last person that I'm with. So if it's heroin, that's some scary stuff. But somebody can be like heroin to you. The way they speak, the way they talk, you can be deeply attracted to them. And it can be like a drug.
Absolutely, yeah. Wonderful comment, Lee. Thank you. Okay, Pam, are you back? No. Okay, so I've got the next poem up. It's by EJ Cool, and she has a SoundCloud, so play that.
Symbiotic Stasis by EJ Cool. Blessed would be this battered soul to imbibe from the Gamla waterfalls of your eyes, within resplendent Rosh Hanikra caves and grottos entombed, I would memorize the way warm waves bend to your whims, shaping shifting light shafts against sacred channels. To die happy would be to drown therein, suspended by tide-swept Galilee annals. Oh, sear my heart of its wickedness. Grant me a finite taste of your infiniteness. Cantillate of white marbled frescoes and gold leaf sky from silvered flutings limitless. I crave to be swallowed whole by the swelling vastness of your grace. Alas, I am tainted. Toxic, vile venom, unworthy impurity, inflicting only ruination. Cauterized scarification, forever separated from pyres, prophets sainted. Your benefaction merely softens my carnivorous edges. Lo, their rows are plenty. Such mercies become undignified upon my invertebrate cells, cracked and empty. Still you send me peerless spiraled shells, filled with gemstone stars and cosmic dusted laughter. I reciprocate with salt-encrusted artillery casings, maimed by war's disaster. You accept my offerings with a smile that blithely tempts the verge of obliteration. Time-bottled gifts bathe me in glass chime notes of the sea, overtaken by your vibration. I am but driftwood, effusing your music as I float dead and helpless, left sand-stranded. High-frequency resonance embodied by lifeless terebinth, fate's fair fortune landed.
Beautiful country, beautiful SoundCloud. You know, this is a fascinating poem with such a vivid description in this otherworldly landscape. You know, you can feel her self-loathing and her partner's acceptance of who she is, and you know, you accept my offerings with a smile that blithely tempts the verge of obliteration. Time bottled gifts bathe me in glass chime notes of the sea, overtaken by your vibration. You know, when that person becomes the whole world, that's fabulous. What did you think, Luke?
My thoughts on this one would be on this line here. I am but driftwood, effusing your music, as I float dead and helpless, left sand-stranded. And, you know, I think, like, driftwood being forced to follow the direction it's forced to go, dead and helpless, left sand-stranded. Once the drifting is complete, almost like the journey is finally over, you are now stranded and left behind. And I'd say that this write speaks of nature and is very beautifully written. There's a lot more to be said, and I think I'll reread this to write a comment that it rightfully deserves.
Great comment. Thank you, Luke. And Bobby, what did you think?
I wish I could have the opportunity to wander around in E.J. Cool's mind while she's writing. This has got to be fascinating. She has just such a gift for pairing words and thoughts. She reminds me of the avant-garde chef that takes ingredients that are diametrically opposed and combines them in such a way that she creates a feast that you would never imagine possible with the components used. I mean, I reciprocate with salt-encrusted artillery casings, maimed by war's disaster. You accept my offerings with a smile that blithely tempts the verge of obliteration. And her phrasing is so intricate and so deliberate. She just reading her work is just it's a feast for the mind. And then she trots out words, high-frequency resonance embodied by lifeless terebinth, I mean, when's the last time you read the word terebinth in a poem? She has such a wonderful command of language and of vocabulary that her readings are like these wonderfully multicolored looks through a kaleidoscope, as every time you turn it, something pops up, and it's just as fascinating as what you saw before.
Absolutely. Thank you for that wonderful comment, Bobby. Lee, what did you think?
Mute.
Can you hear me, Gray?
Yes.
You know, I went and looked, to a little deeper to see what EJ was possibly talking about, and she was saying from Google, the grottos and the caves at Rosh Hanikra are the results of thousands of years of the power of the sea. I more subtly reference the Galilean Sea and the Dead Sea in this piece as well for numerous reasons. The two bodies of water are connected by the River Jordan. The Galilean Sea thrives while the Dead Sea is lifeless. Though the Galilean Sea feeds partially into the Dead Sea, it's not enough to overcome its high salinity. You know, it helped me visually in my mind to see the sensuality and the beauty and the metaphors of this poem, because at times we can feel like we're an empty vessel that is craving, and we know that we need love and we want love. She says, I crave to be swallowed whole by the swelling vastness of your grace. Alas, I am tainted. You know, sometimes we can feel too broken for somebody to love us, but that doesn't mean that we don't want to be loved and that we're not attracted to somebody else that we believe can fill us up, you know, in a relationship. So I thought this was beautifully penned. It was a wonderful poem.
Well, yeah, beautiful comment, Lou. Thank you. Okay, so I'm going to grab the next poem here, and I will give this a read. Okay, posting it now. Okay. This is by Lugia, and it's called Moulin Shore. And when you kiss me, I almost start to cry. I admire your eyes wrinkle as you smile, your tongue intertwined with mine as our temperatures align and our heartbeats synchronize. As your gaze catches my eyes, your hand meets with my desires. You listen closely to my sighs and devour me entirely, despite my cries. Your touch is aggressive, but the pain is addictive. I don't want to distort you with my ideals. I cherish who you are, not as a mere idea. There is only one thing I fear, that I would change you if I interfered. You are perfect as you are. I'd be content with watching you from afar. You are nothing but a mystery, a prince built on fantasy and poem.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, I mean, that was very desirous. I mean, you could feel her want for this person throughout the lines and the need to be consumed whole, even though, I mean, the pain is addictive. But, no, this is a fascinating poem on the subject of giving your all and being content with watching from afar, just because you admire that person so much. Well done, Lucia. And Pam, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, this is just so beautifully written. It's emotive. You know, it's bittersweet because you get the idea of a kind of love where you accept the person as they are, but it hurts so badly and hits really hard at the last two lines. You are nothing but a mystery, a prince built on fantasy. So you got to wonder if the person actually exists and they're just imagining the relationship with them, or they don't exist at all, and they're just imagining what the kind of relationship, the person they want to have a relationship with. So, but beautifully written and very well done.
Great comment. Thank you, Pam. And what did you think, Luke?
I was drawn to, as our temperatures align and our heartbeats synchronize, as your gaze catches my eyes. So it kind of feels like everything is falling into place, almost like a plan has been made inside the person's mind. Temperatures aligning, heartbeats synchronizing, and then the eyes finally are caught in the person's eyes, cherishing who they are for who they are. I believe it's loving someone for who they are rather than what they have. It's about contentment for certain. They also have a fear about the person changing if they interfere, and I think that's a fear that we can all relate to. And I also feel like this is someone dreaming of the perfect person that they wish to be with.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for sharing that, Luke. And Bobby, what are your thoughts?
Again, a very captivating piece. I see this person drawn to this this person that's got a very magnetic, almost a bestial, a magnetic personality. They're drawn to them. They want to be just engulfed by them, but yet they don't know them. They only know what they see. Your touch is aggressive, but the pain is addictive, and pain reminds you you're alive. I don't want to distort you with my ideals. You are nothing but a mystery, a prince built on a fantasy. I don't want to distort you with my ideals. But basically, I cherish who you are, not as a mere idea. I get the sense that this person really doesn't know this the individual and is content in not knowing, because that allows them to fill in the blanks with their own imagination.
Absolutely, yeah. Beautiful comment. Thank you, Bobby. Lou, what are your thoughts?
God, I love everybody's thoughts. You know, I'm not sure. To me, this sounds like somebody that is very youthful, and because she can't express her thoughts or sexuality to this person because she's afraid that, you know, it would change the relationship. And she says right here, I'd be content with watching you from afar. So that leads me to believe that this is a relationship, and even if she couldn't be with that person, she would still be watching them from afar because, like she says here in her notes, the lust and chemistry that she feels for this person. And so, you know, she's just telling them, I cherish you as you are, you know, not a mere idea. So I can't, like everybody was bringing out, is this a real relationship? Is this a young relationship? Or is this a fantasy? I'm not too sure. But, you know, because with the other lines like Pam brought out, is this present fantasy somebody she could watch from afar, or is it that she's dreaming him during the relationship? You know, I don't know, but it thoroughly enjoyable.
Great comment. Thank you, Leah. Okay, Pam, I've got your write-up, if you wouldn't mind, please.
Okie dokie. The tossed glitter in the obsidian shroud. There is a universal source of mystery in the jovial orbit of planets. The horizon is the blink of starlight upon an obsidian shroud. I stare upwards. My spirit embraces the beauty of it all as comets sashay in the tsunami of the eternal fall. Time is a dreary cloudscape where love tosses glitter, scratching the cornea of a wandering traveler, billowing lace and twilight feathers upon the surreal swing of astral travel, lightly stepping across a bridge of hope to see the standing lamp. End poem.
Beautiful read, Pam. And that was a wonderful poem. You know, I really liked it. I mean, it was celestial, ethereal. It really captures your attention right in the very beginning with there is a sort universal source of mystery in the jovial orbit of planets. The horizon is a blink of starlight upon in the obsidian shroud. I mean, how beautiful is that? Excellent, Pam. Excellent job, Pam. Luke, what did you think? Absolutely. Oh, Luke stepped away. Bobby, what did you think?
My first thought was, oh, damn. Pam's at it again. This is a wonderful combination of the thoughts and metaphors, beautiful word painting, the obsidian shroud, great visual imagery. I mean, and the title, Tossed Glitter, a comic sachet in the tsunami of the eternal fall. What a beautiful phrase. I mean, just, damn, I wish I'd written that. scratching the traveler. I mean, just great storytelling, but with such a wonderful complexity to it. Your writing is it's like Wolfgang Puck for the reading. You know, it's not just bologna sandwich. You got something really complex going on here, and it's always a treat.
Thank you, Bobby.
Beautiful comment, Bobby. Thank you. And Louie, what are your thoughts?
I thought this was a visually beautiful poem that you could see all the imageries in the dark with our eyes closed. This is just gorgeous. How, you know, I have always loved watching the stars, and when there's an event, I will go outside in my little outside chair and watch the different universal things that are going on our planet. And, you know, and I thought you caught this so beautifully, just like Bobby brought out. I love this stanza. I stare upwards. My spirit embraces the beauty of it all as comets chassay. Oh, God, that is fantastic. In a tsunami of eternal fall. Time is a dreary cloudscape where love tosses glitter, you know. And I've said this before, when you go to New Mexico in that pitch black, you see that obsidian velvet, and it appears as if glitter was tossed all the way across. And I thought that just brought back so many beautiful memories for me. And I just thought this was wonderful. I mean, how would you not want to be a traveler? And, you know, and you do. If you understand the concept, you can astral travel through these beautiful stars and lights and everything that you bring out here, Pam. Makes me want to get on the starship and head out there.
Absolutely. Thank you, Lou.
Thank you, Lou. Great comment. Okay, so I've got the next poem up, if you wouldn't mind reading that, Luke.
Okay.
Thank you.
Red Rose by Jay Krish. Here is a red rose to you, red that reminds me of your blush. Here is a red rose to you before you forget my body. And my soul is alien to you. Before I and you slip into the oblivion, our minds withered into a vastness where you won't remember my kisses, my prejudices, and my adore for you that flamed at every sight and touch. Here is a red rose to you before it wilts before your eyes and dies in yourself. Before your eyes fail to see its floral form. Here is a red rose to you, my love, before you and I change from the wave to a drop among the ocean.
Excellent read, Luke. And a fantastic poem. I mean, you know, when we are transitioning into old age and we slip away from who we are, you know, that's a haunting thing. And that's what I got out of this poem, is that, you know, he's in love with somebody as they slip into old age and their minds and lives slip away from their control. So I thought it was just a beautiful, touching poem on the subject of losing that love and life itself. So wonderful job, Jay Krish. Pam, what did you think?
Well, first of all, I have to say I really like what you had to say, Gray, because, yeah, I can definitely see that, that idea of somebody's mind slipping away as they suffer from Alzheimer's. I got the general idea. I really liked this poem. I liked how they used the red rose as a representation for something that is temporary. And all the way through, it had a really nice flow to it. And I just got an idea of the temporary nature of self, and even the temporary nature of love. But like you said, there's definitely that idea also kind of losing oneself to a change beyond some your own control. So beautifully written and very well done.
Great comment. Thank you, Pam. And Bobby, what are your thoughts?
I don't think I can do any better than what Pam just said. I really agree with her views on this, and I got the sense that as opposed to dementia, he might also be talking about death. But still, like Pam said, the use of the rose as something very very transient, ephemeral, fragile, like life. Here's a red rose to you, my love, before you and I change from the wave to a drop among the ocean. To me, that suggests returning to the eternal and death.
Absolutely, yes. I agree. Thank you, Bobby. Liu, what are your thoughts?
I thought this was wonderfully read. I enjoyed this poem. This can take you in several directions. You know, to me, this is somebody, like when you're in a relationship and it's fresh, and then, you know, he says, where you won't remember my kisses, my prejudice. You know, sometimes a relationship like this, it dies. That flower or the feeling that she has for him will pass away, because he says, before you and I change from the wave to drop among the oceans. And, you know, and love can die in somebody. So it could be literally physically, like an illness, and like everybody's been bringing out, like Alzheimer's, but it also could be the death of relationship inside someone.
Absolutely. Great comment, Lou. Thank you. And Luke, what are your thoughts?
My thoughts is on this line. Here is a red rose to you, red that reminds me of your blush. And giving someone a flower that represents something that they love about someone is a beautiful description. The idea that a red rose is to remind someone of beautiful memories and something that they love about someone. Like the poppy that is very close to our hearts, flowers can carry a message, and there's many things that can hold meaning, and not just flowers. A red rose wilting and dying is a saddening, but the person gives them another red rose to remind them that even through death, our love will prevail. So it's a beautiful rite that speaks of endless love.
Well said. Thank you, Luke. Okay, Bobby, I have your poem up. If you wouldn't mind, please.
Oh, no. I missed the contest, but I looked at the theme, and I thought this one would be the most fitting. It talks about addiction, but it talks about it in a different direction, like one of the previous pieces. It's called Belladonna. His attention was on her scarlet nails as her fingers toyed with a stemmed chalice, blood of the grape, and a cup on a pedestal, as if on an altar, an offering to dark gods of dread awakening and dire revelation. Smiling, she handed him the glass flooded in crimson liquid the candlelight dancing through the sanguine fluid, swirling amid the scent of damp humus and past lives, amplified by a theater of velvet shadows and soft music as twilight engulfed the room, corners immersed in mystery. Daughter of Nyx, her shadowy countenance anchored him where he stood, her obsidian gaze through coal eyes auguring holes into his soul, her caress laced with seductive foreboding. His eager mouth sought out her waiting lips, and as he purloined a kiss, she plundered his soul. With the taste of her on his tongue, all other kisses faded. Soft, cerise thieves lingered, drew closer to his ear, her mellifluous voice sapping his resistance. As she spoke, her whispered, honeyed, dusky words cascaded into his head. Rising, filling the hollowed-out organ with the sweet poison of her indifferent ascendancy. In these moments, she had become the demiurge of his existence. She was his Circe, hypnotic, irresistible, toxic. He filled his empty cup with her rapacious aspect and drank deeply, besotted with her chimerical presence. Not comprehending that he coveted his own destruction, he sought to consume and was consumed instead. While fulfilling his overwhelming desires, she, in turn, would slake her inexhaustible thirst at his peril, he the mortal vessel of her malignant draught. As the deliciously sharp pain stung his carotid, he forgot time. He had no yesterdays. No tomorrows, only this moment, saturating his senses, offering an irresistible anesthesia to his tepid existence. The penetrating febrile gelid darkness ravaged him as a paretic vermilion rivulet escaped from her lips, and he thought the roaring in his skull was the sound of night rushing toward him. His breathing diminishing, his consciousness escaping. Belladonna, he whispered weakly, I am yours. She paused, her bemused reply, yes, I know, as Atropos severed his thread. End poem.
Wow, fascinating, right, Bobby? This is just deeply dark and beautiful at the same time. You know, when somebody becomes so enamored by something, they're willing to risk their life and that need to consume, and they themselves become consumed. But, you know, yeah, there's such amazing attention to detail. I really liked where you said, here we go. Amplified by a theater of velvet shadows and soft music as twilight engulfed the room. Corners immersed in mystery. I mean, that's epic. Just a beautiful poem, Bobby. Thank you for that beautiful read
as
well. Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for sharing that again. Pam, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I thought this was just an epic, dark tale. I like how you use mythology, such as the mention of Circe and the mention of Nyx. I really like how this is about that dark seduction. I particularly am drawn to that the stanza says, daughter of Nyx, her shadowy confidence anchored him where he stood. It fits really well with the subject of lust and love and addiction. I thought it was a perfect name choice for the main character, given that belladonna means beautiful lady, but also is a poisonous plant. And I thought this had a wonderful ending with the whole concept of complete surrender. So beautifully written and very well done, Bobby.
Thank you, Pam.
Absolutely. And Luke, would you like to share your thoughts?
Yeah, absolutely. This was very dark, visually pleasant, that I found to be quite addicting and enticing to read. The description of her toying with something just captures a perfect image of who she is and what she's capable of without even going any further into the poem itself. Betrayal appears. I feel the darkness within this is slowly consuming everything. She is someone of power and incredibly toxic behavior. The man is already fixated on her from the very start, as he is self-destructed and being consumed by the darkness that she carries. And this aura of darkness consumes all. And there's a lot of beautiful metaphors, description, visual details. There's so much to admire about this rite. Every word has been very beautifully weaved into each other. It's like a nightmare in visual form. Maybe not a nightmare that we all have, but a nightmare that consumes all. Incredibly twisted.
Thank you so much.
Great. Excellent comment, Luke. Thank you. And Liu, what are your thoughts?
I thought Bobby did a fantastic job in reading her poem. I love Greek mythology, and I thought that she so caught the personality of, you know, this Greek goddess. Right here where this just, I smiled at the end, but what I loved was the seduction. Right here where you said, and I agree, it just pulls you in. Let me see. Hold on a second. Where is it? Her mouth sought out her waiting lips, and as he purloined a kiss, she plundered his soul with the taste of her on his tongue. All their kisses faded. Soft crevice thrives lingered, draw closer to his ear, her melodious voice sapping his resistance. You can just see the total control and focus that she had, because she would decide how these mortals would die. And right here in the end, I smiled, but it was so delicious and so sexy. Belladonna, he whispered weakly, I am yours. She paused, her bemused reply, and just so sweet and sarcastic and deadly. Yes, I know. So she severed his thread. That just bam! I totally enjoyed this. This could be a short movie or a short movie clip. I thought it was fantastic.
Thank you very much, Lou.
And tempting.
This is one of my favorite writes.
Absolutely.
Enjoyable.
Lou, would you mind reading For Passion to Promise, please?
Okay, let me refresh my page. Footprints have faded. Passion's promise. The serpent's spirit spitting a sacred song, a dreamer's damaged by destiny's tongue. I weave words of wisdom, but it all went wrong, buried before the breaking of dawn. Footprints have faded, and finally I fall. There's only teardrops, a traveling trial. Crafty the cradle that holds catastrophic call. I am the leader of a legacy of lyrical cries. Search I shall. The serpent's strangling sigh reached down its throat to collect my dream. Oh, great demons, I do long to die. Nothing better than a peace of mind. Down the drain all the dreams of disaster. Crimson spills from wrists of weathered thoughts, digging down deeper, the dreams fall faster, and into death's arms I gladly embrace. End poem.
Beautiful read, Liu. And I mean, it was such a hauntingly tragic poem of being at the end of one's rope, so to speak, when life has just kicked you down so hard that, you know, you don't want to get back up. And, you know, that's the end. But, you know, the whole poem was epically haunting and very tragic. What did you think, Pam?
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, this definitely was tragic. It's haunting. It's emotive. It has the feeling of dreams being crushed, of a life that seems to be falling into an abyss. Even the imagery of footprints have faded and finally I fall feels like the whole idea of someone who once walked side by side with you, leaving you, abandoning you, and just beautifully written all the way through and very well done.
Great comment, Pam. Thank you. And Luke, what are your thoughts?
Well, my thoughts on this one is that it is hauntingly written. Footprints fading away, teardrops that now form the trail is such an emotive description. A leader of lyrical cries is just, again, another beautiful part to this, right? And then you've got a serpent that has swallowed someone's dream. You know, it's such a creepy detail that, in my opinion, like, requires strength and bravery to overcome. I just feel that this is about loss and someone that has finally been left alone. And this is someone that embraces that, you know, this is over. Just very beautiful and very well done.
Great comment, Luke. Thank you. And Bobby, what are your thoughts?
I revisit a word that's been used several times already. It is haunting. It is indeed haunting. A conjuring that the serpent as the destroyer. The serpent spitting a sacred song, a dreamer's damage by destiny's tongue. And then the serpent reappears further into the piece. Oh, great demons, I do long to die, nothing better than peace of mind. This is a very dark, very visceral rite, very powerful. The imagery just carries you along, and it's great storytelling. And considering this is what, four stanzas of four lines, each is 16 lines. I mean, this is a terrific piece.
Absolutely, yeah. Beautiful comment. Thank you. And Lee, what are your thoughts?
You know, I agree with everybody that this is very haunting and very sad. You know, this, you know, I don't know exactly what she means when she was writing this, but, you know, something is torturing her in her dreams, whether it's literally physical or it's her mind. And, you know, she says that she tries to affirm words of wisdom, but then she says, before the break of dawn, which, you know, like insomnia, sometimes you see things and hear things. I don't know if she's seeing and hearing things because it says it's buried before the break of dawn. So I don't know if it's her inner thoughts and the dreams that she's trying to push away. And, you know, she says that, you know, that shirts I shall, the serpent strangling sigh reaches down to my throat to collect my dreams. So something is, you know, somebody is stealing her dreams or what she would like to do. And, you know, and what I like, but I can't say it's liked, but what I understand is, you know, that sometimes when we're going through something, you know, I don't know if you all have, but you wish you could just die, you know, because you've had it to your limits and I can't deal with this anymore. And I don't know exactly, you know, where she's talking about down the drain, crimson spilling from the wrist, you know, that, you know, that they cut themselves to deal with pain. And then when they finally can't take it, they cut deeper so that they actually do die. God, this is very sad, very haunting, very visual.
Well said, Lee. Thank you. Okay, I've got the next poem up, and this is by S. Sharp, and it's called A Day at Huntington Beach. Waves roll with pulsating power, white walls pounding above the shore, upon the shore. The unmistakable smell of the sea crawls about, permeating everything. The sun waves, too, crash and crisp my browning skin. A seagull floating on the cool ocean breeze screams, "Listen!" As children run by screaming, they kick up parched sand. Damned kids, don't know how valuable this is. A day at the beach, the immortality of the ocean, whispering where it's been and telling us where it's going. Kids just want to laugh and play like the ocean. You know, you're immortal at that age, splashing through unmarked time, wave after wave, splash upon splash. I don't want to tell them this all ends one day. Oh, hell, they probably wouldn't listen to me. Maybe someday they'll learn to listen to the sea. And, yeah, that was a beautiful poem. But, no, I mean, you know, that was, it was a deeply introspective day at the beach, you know, where you're comparing time and waves of the ocean and the children's lives with yours and the value of the day in your eyes versus theirs. So, yeah, just a beautiful poem on the subject of a day at the beach. Pam, what did you think?
Yeah, I really enjoyed this. I liked how it can be literally about a day at the beach, and it also works well on a metaphorical level. And how, you know, at different ages we face life and we face life's challenges, you know, in different ways, like how in our the recklessness of youth we tend to head straight into problems, you know, just run head first willy-nilly. And then, but in our, as we age, we begin to learn some, you know, like the idea of taking a step back and observing and noting what's going on before jumping in to the water. And so I like that he brings in the idea of the different generations. So wonderful use of imagery and metaphors, and very well done.
Great comment, Pam. Thank you. And Luke, what's your thoughts?
My thoughts on this one is that it starts aggressive and like a wave just toward the end of the poem itself. It kind of calms itself. So the entire poem kind of feels like a wave. I'd say that it's aggressive with the wave's pulsating power while pounding with powerful strength. Then you have the voice of reason that's in the form of seagull. The difference is that compared to the sun that's crisping the skin, the seagull is floating above a cool ocean breeze that is more calming than the waves at the beginning. It's speaking of how people are forgetting the things that are important, the things that might be taken for granted. Kids compared to an ocean is a great detail. It speaks of innocence, and it feels like someone that wants to be listened to, just like how the seagull wanted the person to listen to them. So a beautiful line.
Great comment, Luke. Thank you. And Bobby, what are your thoughts?
I like Luke's comment. Very insightful on how the power of the opening of the piece. I've always enjoyed Scott's writing, and he has a very delicate way of weaving philosophy into each of his pieces. Some more conspicuous, some more prevalent than the other. But you always get a sense of his thinking about life and how it's fragile and how the moment doesn't last. And this also speaks to that and how children have no concept. And children do not have that. They have no concept of linear time.
Mm-hmm.
And so here these children are just, they're existing in the moment, which is actually a gift to be able to exist in the moment and not have to worry about what's come before or what comes after. And he's almost annoyed by this, damn kids. And he sees them further down the road experiencing what he's experienced, and all of a sudden the fragile, ephemeral nature of life and existence overtakes them the way it's overtaken him. It's a beautifully philosophical piece. Speaks to metaphysics and how he ties the passage of time and his age and children to the immortality of the ocean.
I agree, Bobby. Thank you so much for that wonderful comment. And Louie, what are your thoughts?
Oh, God, I really love the comments from everybody. you, Pam, Luke, and Bobby. For me, you know, this reminded me, like everybody's talking about, like Aesop lessons. You know, if you don't listen, something's going to go wrong. And we have always been taught, maybe it's just my heritage, where you have to respect nature, because nature can support you and support life, and we can enjoy it, but it also can be deathly beautiful. And, you know, how many times as a kid, you know, you got to learn the hard way, you know. And this to me is also something for parents, that you need, even though you're going out there to have a good time at the beach, doesn't mean that you're safe. You know, you still have to be aware of everything around you. You know, damn kids don't know how valuable this is. A day at the beach, the immortality of the ocean, whispering where it's been, telling us where it's going. You know, and also that's, I think in our society we have lost, and they have killed so much of history, of myths and legends that were held down because so many different languages were destroyed to learn, they were only learned to speak English. So many things have gotten lost in this generation. And he says, I don't want to tell them this all ends one day in hell, and probably they won't listen to me. And they don't. Maybe someday they'll listen to the sea, you know, and hope that they grow respect for it.
Yeah, absolutely. Wonderful comment, Louie. Thank you. Okay, Pam, I have the next write-up, if you wouldn't mind, please.
I'd be happy to. Though Sinners, You and I by Joseph DiMaggio. Here are a myriad of reasons why fate evaded my confrontation. Why on earth would she speak to me again? For it was I who made my own bed, though I did not sleep in it. It was but a bed of nails. I shudder to say more, but I fear her sister destitute will arise with a plight beyond my might to make me suffer for the pain I have inflicted. Our remorseful acts, I was once addicted to many bad habits I once carried around my neck, was an anchor disguised as a necklace. These days I found forgiveness with God. But truth be told, I'm far from being refined. Too many stones, so much wasted time. Rivers did I cry by night. Through valleys of fog, lurking with bogs, is my journey filled until I reach heaven with nigh God's lonely man. He can be seen during the day, during the night. Pray for me, and so will I, that our travels may be rewarded, those sinners, you and I. And poem.
Beautiful read, Pam. And I liked it. I mean, you know, it was self-deprecating. It was introspective. It was definitely forthright in its, you know, his thoughts and hopes that, you know, he'll be accepted into heaven and that our travels may be rewarded, those sinners, you and I. Just a beautiful poem on the subject of addiction. And his addiction, he says in his author's notes, is love. So, haunting poem. What did you think, Pam?
Yeah, I have to agree. It was beautifully written. I really like how this takes on the idea of addiction, but it's the idea of someone who knows that they made wrong choices in life. And it gives mm-hmm. me the whole idea of someone who realizes that they have to move forward, but moving forward doesn't mean moving forward as a perfect person, but rather as a sorry person. So beautifully written and very well done.
Absolutely. Great comment, Pam. Thank you. And Luke, what did you think?
I would say that it's confusion at first with a question, self-acceptance, and it's like adulting, how someone knows that they are flawed and they are coming to accept this now. This poem speaks of truth. It's a serious look at someone's self-reflection. They are aware of what they've done and they're trying to express this in the right itself. I was drawn to this. Around my neck was an anchor disguised as a necklace. this speaks of something weighing the person down. Is the necklace a gift? And how can something beautiful drag you down so much? These are just some of the questions I've asked myself. Overall, beautifully written and a powerful write.
Great comment, Luke. Thank you. And Bobby, what are your thoughts?
Deeply philosophical and introspective piece. I hear it asking, the author asking themselves more questions than they can answer. They're still searching for answers. Why on earth would she speak to me again? Remorseful acts. I was once addicted. Too many bad habits I once carried. Yes, I agree that line around my neck is an anchor disguised as a necklace. I'm far from being refined. There's a lot of remorse here, and realizing that the road, the path cannot be retraveled, and there's no do-overs. And right now, it feels like the writer is looking for redemption, desperately looking for redemption.
Absolutely, yeah. And Lee, what are your thoughts?
You know, this was, for me, I got two thoughts. One of them is to remind us that we all make mistakes. We are all sinners. We all sin. And, you know, but with him, he says, I can see my past sins. You know, to me, this was like a very sad confession, you know, that, you know, why would earth, would she speak to me again? You know, he doesn't exactly explain what caused the separation. You know, he even says, for I fear her sister destitute will rise. You know, like, you know, he's afraid that he's going to be asked to pay for his sins for whatever it was that he had done. You know, and he says, and this weighs around him, the things that he's done. You know, and he says, but now, you know, obviously time has gone by and he's gotten older. And he says, these days I've found forgiveness with God. Truth be told, I'm far from being refined. You know, and, you know, and then he goes back again. He says, too many stories, so much wasted time. Rivers did I cry by night, because he was even tortured by, you know, sometimes you wonder, why did I do that? And you just, you know, just like hit your head and give me another V8. You know, you just don't understand sometimes why you do things, but you do them again. And, I felt my heart so heavy when he says, in my journey filled until I reach heaven with sigh, God, a lonely man. You know, and, you know, that's just like, oh, that hurt.
Absolutely. Would you like to say anything about any upcoming shows, Pam?
I'll just say, make sure to check out all the shows and contests put out by our late night poets, hosts, and hostesses, because you're sure to find something to inspire.
Okay, great comment. Thank you, Pam. All right, everybody, I'd like to thank you all for calling in to share your hearts, your minds, your voices, and most especially your time. Luke, it was great having you.
Thank you.
And sharing your voice.
Thank you very much.
Have a great night, everyone. Good night, all.
Good night. Besotes a todos. Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Good night, all.
Thank you.
Ooh.